You're listening to The Course Creator Show, the podcast all about building your online course business. We talk about marketing strategy, making money, and creating a business with impact that gives you freedom and lights you up. I'm Gemma Bonham Carter, a Canadian mom of two, a speaker, a real estate investor, a reality TV lover, and an online business strategist who has helped thousands of entrepreneurs create, launch, and scale their digital course businesses. Let's dive into this episode. Hey, podcast fam. All right. Every so often, I'm interviewed on a podcast that just nails it. Recently, I had the pleasure of being on Sarah Vadeboncoeur's podcast, The Fatigue Fixer. Sarah is actually a student of mine, and I have been a student of hers. She's a naturopathic doctor based in Ottawa, Canada, where I'm from, and I actually took a women's health group coaching program with her a few years ago. Frankly, I loved it, and I'm still using a lot of the tips and advice she gave in that program to this day. So Sarah had me on her show, and our entire conversation was based really about lifestyle, taking action to make your dreams happen, and living the life you want now. It was a fun conversation and I think really inspiring. So immediately after taping, I asked if we could publish the interview here to my show as well. And lucky for us, she agreed. So let's roll the tape here on the interview I did on Sarah's podcast, The Fatigue Fixer, produced by the Story Studio Network. You're gonna love it.
This is SSN,
Story Studio Network.
Welcome to the Fatigue Fixer podcast. Ever wonder why it feels like the entire sisterhood is just so darn exhausted? We're diving deep into everything from those sneaky physical culprits, think iron levels playing hide and seek or a moody thyroid, to the mental weights of always being on and that sneaky urge to please everyone. And let's not forget society's oh-so-high bar that we're tirelessly trying to reach. I'm Dr. Sarah Vadeboncoeur, your guide on this energy-finding mission. As a naturopathic doctor with over a decade of experience, I've been piecing together the fatigue puzzle, asking why so many incredible women around me, including my patients, often feel like they're running on empty. So pull up a chair or perhaps pop in your headphones and head out for a walk. Together, we'll uncover those hidden, surprising, and sometimes even downright unexpected reasons behind that lingering tiredness. Ready to recharge those batteries? All right, deep breath. Let's jump into today's insightful episode. I had the most wonderful thing happen to me this year at Thanksgiving. All because I decided to sit down at a coffee shop instead of taking my coffee to go. I had been inspired by our guest today, who had recently moved to France and posted about how in France, people don't walk around with their coffee. They sit at the cafe and actually just take a pause to drink and enjoy their coffee. As I sipped my maple latte and ate my yummy pumpkin scone, a woman sat down next to me and placed down a book called The Creative Act by Rick Rubin. That's a great book, I said to her. And what followed felt like a meet-cute in a movie where two strangers quickly hit it off and become friends in the span of an hour. We talked about family and relationships like we'd known each other for years. At the end, we hugged, followed each other on Instagram. And as I got into my car, I couldn't help but feel like I would have missed out on that entire experience if I had just taken my coffee to go. And that's what we're talking about today, in the one where you start living the life you want now. How can we let ourselves acknowledge what we really want and then intentionally create a life that is in alignment with our true wants and desires now? Because nothing will give you energy faster than letting yourself have what it is you really want. My guest today is Gemma Bonham Carter. Gemma is the founder of a seven-figure-a-year education company that helps coaches, content creators, and service providers turn what they know into profitable online courses business. She is known for her strategic advice and has worked with over 10,000 students since 2017 across hundreds of industries, including health, wellness, real estate, parenting, marketing, and more. Named by Entrepreneur as a top five women in business in 2021, Gemma has been featured in Inc., The Globe and Mail, BuzzFeed, Today.com, and more. With a loyal audience of over 60,000, and I'm in there for sure, Gemma's unique take on online entrepreneurship has made her the go-to voice for ambitious personal brand business owners who want to launch courses and build a lifestyle business. Her main two programs are Course Creator School for new course creators and The Passive Project for experienced course creators looking to hit six figures a year and beyond. Gemma is based in Ottawa, Canada, where she is raising two kids, always working on her latest real estate project on the side or watching the latest episode of The Real Housewives. Gemma, welcome to the Fatigue Fixer podcast.
I could not be more excited to be here. That was such a fun introduction. I love that story. I am so glad that I shared that little snippet of, yes, one of the first pieces of advice we got once we moved to France, which was this lovely French woman who said it in not a rude way at all, but just like a, hey, you guys must be North American because you're walking with your coffee and we don't do that here. And I'm so glad to hear about that ripple effect.
Yeah. And I remember when I first sat down before I even met this other woman, I sent you a DM on Instagram to be like, I'm so inspired by that. So it's just amazing to me how the little things that we share online can have these like massive ripple effects. And I thought about that so much when I got into my car. It's like, we often think that the lives we want are these like fancy, really different things. But it just reminded me that if we actually just slow down and we're more intentional and literally just, it might just mean that you sit with your coffee instead of drinking it while you make your kids' lunches or running around doing errands. And that's where life is actually happening to me, is like, that's what was so poignant for me that weekend. Like, this is where life happens, in these tiny little moments.
And so often we're just rushing that the small moments, we don't give them space to happen, or we're missing them entirely.
Yeah. One of the reasons I really wanted to have you on is that something I admire so much about you as someone running a seven-figure business who has this amazing presence and just like an amazing business is that you really do seem to model this like balanced life. And I don't even like the word balance because I think it's so overused, but I've worked with a lot of different coaches and mentors, and so many of them are, even though they don't always want to admit it, they are really wrapped up in like the hustling and the grind culture. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I love so much about you is you seem to have found a way to create a very profitable business where you're sharing your gifts, but also not at the expense of your health and your family and your life. Yeah. What are some of the things that you've done or either like have chosen not to do that you feel have allowed you to find this balance?
I think it's a couple of things. So the first was that when I first started my business, which doesn't look like what my business looks like today, we had a very twisty journey to get to where I am. But when I started in this world of entrepreneurship, I had babies at home, and it was simply a matter of, no matter how ambitious or driven or motivated I was, like my work hour window was extremely small. It was like, if they had a 2-hour nap, that was like a dream. And that was my work hour for the day. So I was simply constrained by the boundaries of like early motherhood. And I think that what that did was it made me be extremely focused on only the activities that would, you know, propel my business forward. And while there were maybe 17 things that I felt like I should be doing or other people were doing, or, you know, I wanted to keep up with the Joneses, I just couldn't do them. I just didn't have the bandwidth or time for that. And so having that really pared down, like, version of my business to begin with, I carried that through, I think, like that mentality, even as my kids got older and went to daycare and school and things like that. As my work hours increased, I continued to have a really tight vision of, not doing things just because I felt like I should be doing them or saw other people doing them. I needed to be in line with what the vision of what I wanted my business to look like. And that's not to say I've taken like some wrong turns here and there or tried something and then really realized, oh, no, like that's not for me. And sometimes those were, you know, could have been really profitable things that I said no to because they just didn't fit either within my lifestyle or just how I like. There's just some things that give me stress and anxiety and I can feel it in my body. And if I can feel that, then it's a no for me, no matter how big it might make my business or whatever that looks like. I think the other thing is I've been doing this a while. Like I have had a, sure, there's, I'm at a place now, which I feel exceptionally like proud and lucky to be at. But it was not some overnight success story. And I've been working away at it for years. So I think that we hear stories and we expect that it's going to happen in 6 months or 12 months. But you need to know, like, I started a blog in 2010. It is now about to be 2024. And, you know, that's years of development. So that's another important piece to consider that I think often gets missed. And then the last thing I'll say is that I also, and I didn't have this mentality in the very beginning, but it's something in the last couple of years I've sort of realized is that the key for me is to allow myself to flow into a season of hustle because I love when I feel really excited about something. Like I've had a couple times in this past year where I was working on a new project, I was amped up and I just could not wait to get to my computer and like get working and I can lose myself in it for hours. But then just as often as I do that, or maybe more often, I flow out into like a season that has a lot more rest and white space built into it, because if I don't do that, then, oh my gosh, I can't even imagine what it would be like if I worked at that level of hustle 24/7, 365. So I think having those natural flow in and flow out moments has really helped me. And part of what builds in the flow out or like rest periods has been travel. And my husband and I love travel and we put that as a priority for our family every year. And so I baked it into my schedule from the beginning. Like I don't work when I'm traveling. You know, except for maybe checking some emails, make sure there's no fires put out.
Right.
But not in any real way.
Yeah. I love that. And I think that what you just said about flowing into the hustle and flowing back out is such an important thing to learn how to do. So whether you are a business owner or whether you work a 9-to-5, I find there's such this tendency, especially for women, to hang out in the flow of the hustle all the time because we feel like we have to. And we also a lot of times feel like, especially in our business, I have this all the time where it's like, if I take my foot off the brake, is it going to like fall apart or am I going to miss out on income or opportunities? And I think what you're saying, which is what I've learned as well, is that you need those moments of flowing out. You need those moments of rest so that when you do get inspired or when a big project lands on your lap, you have the energy and the resources to be able to flow into a period of hustle, but you can't hang out there all the time. It's just not feasible.
It's not feasible. And I don't think it's going to produce your best work either in whatever you do. I just think I've really noticed the correlation of the more excited and passionate I am about whatever that project is that I'm working on, the more successful it ends up being. And when you feel at the same time, the flip side of that is like, I have sometimes done promotions or whatever it looks like when I'm kind of not entirely feeling it. And it shows in the results.
Yeah. And I think that translates into like non-business life too. Like how often do we go through our days doing things that we're not excited about, we're not really into, we're doing them again because some part of our brain thinks we should be doing them or someone else told us to do it. And then when we are doing things that we love, right, when we're doing the activities that fill our cup, like it gives you this, there's a certain type of energy that flows from that that is hard to get anywhere else when you're literally just doing the work that you love and putting all of your energy into it. I'm so glad you talked about starting small, because I literally have to tell you that I have ornaments on my Christmas tree right now. Yes, from a workshop that you gave, I want to say around 2010. So, I do. I came to your workshops. I know. I was like, I have to tell her. She'll appreciate that. So you started your career in public health. And then when your kids were really little is when you started this home kind of decor blog, I think is where it kind of started. And I think so many women have ideas, right? We have these things we'd love to do, maybe a business idea, maybe a book idea. And for a million reasons, we don't take action on it. So can you share with us, like, what did that initial spark of inspiration feel like? Like, where did that idea come from? And then what gave you the confidence to actually do it?
Okay, this is such a good question. And I feel like I could reflect on it for a long time. But I honestly, when I think back to creating my very, that blog that really started it all, it was actually pre-kids, the blog. And it was my then boyfriend, now husband, we'd bought our first home and it was a real fixer-upper. And for those who were diehard blog readers back in the day, there was a blog called Young House Love, which was also like a DIY home decor blog run by this couple, Sherry and John Petersick. And I loved it. I read it religiously. It was kind of like the original influencers, right? Was bloggers. And so I thought, well, that's such a fun idea to like have a diary of your renovations. And we were about to do things like that too. And I thought, well, maybe I'll do something like that just for fun. No business idea attached to this. So I think maybe that was what gave me the sort of the permission to do it, was because I wasn't putting pressure on myself for this to become some profitable business. It was just a creative hobby on the side of my very real 9-to-5 job in public health, which didn't really allow for a ton of creativity. And I've always been, I mean, ask my parents like how many rainbows I drew as a kid and cranked out. I had like a rainbow production factory for the better part of my childhood. And so I needed to do something that was creative. And so that was an easy jump for me. I thought about the name for all of 2.5 seconds. It called it the Sweetest Digs, which like I hated from about month two onwards. And just started blogging. And I think it was just like, it flipped a switch for me that reignited that creative part of myself and got me really inspired. And I would sit and write blog posts at night so happily. Like, I was not needing to go and watch a TV show. All I wanted to do after work was open my laptop and write blog posts. And so eventually, without going into like every little piece of detail, but eventually that grew into something. I met with other bloggers. I started to understand the business of blogging, and it grew into all kinds of things, which included like DIY workshops in Ottawa. That was like one, you know, little angle of my income generation for a while. I also did craft fairs for a while. I had an Etsy store. I did all these different things to kind of experiment with, okay, well, how could I make money doing this creative stuff? And really, it didn't like land for me until 6 years later, 2016, when I finally was giving presentations about blogging. I was like asked to speak at some conferences. And I gave these presentations, and I'd always been like, now that I look back on it, there's been elements of being a teacher, like in so much of what I've done. And also like, okay, I won all the public speaking things when I was a kid. Like,
of course
speeches,
you did.
I gold medal.
Me
right
too.
Here.
I loved it. I loved it.
Yeah. So put me in front of a room of people with like a prepared presentation. I'm not so good at like the riffing thing, or at least I get too nervous about that part, but give me like my slide deck and I'm happy and love to teach. And what happened was I got all this amazing response, and I thought, oh my gosh, okay, this is like turning into something. Like, this is, there's a little clue here. And I think that's also important when we're, if you're thinking about doing something like writing a book or whatever that might be, like think about those clues, try and really be mindful of, yeah, the things that are like twigging a little bit of like joy for you, or where you do have that like high afterwards. And those are clues that like, this is something that you should really pursue. So I was having those clues, and it really led me to moving into this space, which is like online education. And I started small. I had a I used to go live in a Facebook group to share tips about blogging. And it just like one thing turned into another and it's landed me where I am today. And the confidence has grown over time. I definitely did not step into things and have a huge amount of confidence that powered me through. I certainly had my doubts, like the imposter syndrome stuff, all of that for sure. But I never let it hold, it never held me back from going ahead and doing the thing. And I can't actually tell you why. Like, I don't have some perfect tip for that other than I think my vision of what I wanted was so strong and the desire for it was so strong that you couldn't tell me not to do it. But I will say I didn't make it super public, like within my friends and family circle, because if things were a failure, I just wanted to be like a quiet failure on the internet, not like a huge public failure, if that makes sense, with your closest circle. So I still don't even talk about my business that much in front of family. Really, I don't know. Yeah. It's interesting.
It is interesting. I think you said so many things in there that I want to kind of pick up on. Number one is that in the beginning, your goal was not to monetize this, right? Like your goal was not to have this replace your job. And I think there is a little bit of this trend right now in the entrepreneurial space that you have to turn your passion into a monetized project and that we should all quit our 9-to-5s. And like, I think that's a lovely idea. And I'm so glad to be self-employed. I can't imagine. I think I'm unemployable at this point. Like I couldn't go back. But that's not the reality for everyone. And I think if you have, like Gemma said, if you're getting those little signs and that's your body's way, right? Our body is so wise. When you're doing the things that your body and your heart and your brain want you to do, it feels good. Right? You're going to get that flow state. You're going to get that positive feedback. You're going to feel good. And that's all the ways that your body is trying to guide you to do more of that thing. So that's so important to pay attention to that. But it doesn't mean it needs to become your full-time job. It doesn't mean you need to quit your 9-to-5. But like Gemma said, like when you have this desire and this passion, if you can even put a little bit of your time, whether it's when your kids are napping or when they're at school or when the kids go to bed, it's amazing how much I find this can shift our experience of our day-to-day lives when we actually carve out time and space for these things that like not just light us up, but are actually our gifts. And this is something I'm becoming more and more passionate about is like, I want women to share our gifts more openly because we all have one and most of us have many gifts. And so many of us aren't sharing them because we're so stuck in the like the grind of the day to day.
Or we see other people's gifts and think ours aren't necessarily as good as or as valuable as, and therefore we kind of like shut them down.
Yeah. Or we think our gifts aren't special because they're so obvious to us. Like the speaking is a perfect example. Like I never thought of that until recently where I was like, yeah, most people don't love getting on a stage and speaking. I'm like, I love it. I thrive on that. Like your gift probably feels so easy and natural to you that you might not realize that not everyone has that gift too. And the other thing I wrote down, which I think you talked about, which is so good too, is just to enjoy the journey. Like when you started your blog in 2010, I'm sure you could not imagine or envision where you would be sitting today in France with your family with this like seven-figure business. So I think a lot of times we don't take that first step or we hold ourselves back because we can't see the final product. And I would like, we're not meant to see the final product because a lot of times it'll be so much bigger and better and different than what we could even imagine or envision for ourselves.
Yeah. And there's not like one destination. Like, even though I've built my business to this place, it's not like, I don't know. I don't feel that I've arrived. What does that even mean? And how boring if I did. And I don't even mean from a monetary perspective. Like, I just think that there's so many other things I'm going to have fun, like exploring and learning and growing into and trying that's so exciting because that's the best part.
Yeah, I love that. It's true. I think it's like just letting go of that need for like the control or the certainty, which is like, if you really do want to step into this, whether it's creativity or whether it's entrepreneurship, and that's why I think not everyone can be an entrepreneur, is you have to relinquish some of that control and that certainty. It's not part of the entrepreneurial journey, which means it's not for everyone, and that's okay. Can we talk about how you moved your family?
Yes.
So earlier this year, you picked up your family and moved from Ottawa to France. So can we talk about where that first kind of idea came from? And again, like, what made you pick up and just do it now?
Yeah, I mean, as I mentioned earlier, travel is a big priority item for my husband and I, and it has been since we were like in our early 20s, just the two of us. And we've done tons and tons of trips and backpacked around Southeast Asia for half a year and did all these things. Lived in London, actually, London, England, when I got my master's degree in public health. And so when we were deciding to have kids, it was a conversation of like, okay, you know, we're going to have kids, you know, hopefully. But what does that look like? What are some of the things that we want to make sure that we incorporate as parents? And travel was a big piece of that. And not just like a week here and there. Like, we wanted to make sure that we weren't going to then go 20 years without having kind of like really immersive travel experiences. And so we'd always talked about doing these a year abroad here and there. And so we have my daughter and then we have my son. And, you know, those early years are very full on. And it was always in the back of our mind that we were going to, you know, sort of talked about like, okay, what would be quite the right ages, and always sort of having those discussions in the background. And then COVID happened and suddenly the world shut down. And we suddenly realized like, holy crow, you know, we can't really predict what's going to happen. And there's kind of like having a kid. There's never a perfect time to do anything. You kind of just need to decide and do it, even if not all the stars are aligned or, you know, things aren't lined up in the way that you might hope them to be. And so it was the summer of 2022 when, you know, life seemed normal-ish again. And we were sitting down at the water at my parents' cottage. And I kind of just looked at him and I was like, if we're going to do this, like, suddenly our kids are getting older. And we're like, if we're going to do it, and especially if we're going to do it twice, because like we've talked about doing it twice over the span of their childhood. Like, we got to get number one cracking here. So, and the reason why we chose France was because the language piece for us was one of the big criteria. Our kids are already learning French. Canada's bilingual. Like, what a great advantage for them to be immersed in French for a year and really like excel. So we already knew that France was going to be it. And so literally on that evening at the cottage, we pulled open Google Maps with France. And we literally looked at just the bottom half because I wanted a warm winter. I was not willing to be cold. And we looked at the bottom half and just kind of like wrote down, I think it was like six names of cities that were like the right sort of size for what we were looking for. And then we just started to talk with people that we knew. And I don't know, I looked at way too many like Google image searches of like all these different cities and just tried to get a feel for them. And landed on Aix-en-Provence, which is where we ended up in a lovely apartment. We're sort of right in the old part of town. And yeah, we're so happy. But and it wasn't easy. There's like a lot of, oh my gosh, like all the hassle of moving and especially moving abroad and figuring out, yeah, like kid stuff, work stuff, school stuff, and making that all happen. Visas, like the whole shebang. But now that we're here and settled and in it, damn, am I ever happy we like made the decision to just go for it.
I love that. I think so many of us, and you said this, like we're waiting for this perfect moment that is probably never coming. like spoiler alert, there's never going to be a perfect time where all the stars align and you can do the things you want to do. And I think we often, especially in North America, we have this culture where we're waiting for retirement to start living our lives. Like we're waiting to be 65 to start traveling, which again, hopefully you make it to 65, number one. Number two, who knows what your health or the world or like, who knows And you're right. The pandemic, like, hopefully showed us, like, things can change very quickly. And so that's why I wanted to do this episode, that I want us to stop waiting for some magical future date to start doing the things that we want. And I wrote down an underline, like, decide, because that's ultimately the first thing we need to do, whether it's that you want to write a book, you want to move your family across the world, you want to take a trip. The first step is you just have to make a decision. And that doesn't mean, like Gemma said, there's going to be lots of things you have to do after that. But ultimately, you have to decide that you want to do the thing. And I think we've all had this experience that when you decide you want something, you figure out how to make it happen. But most of us are hanging out in indecision land, saying, like, I want it, but I can't have it, or it doesn't make sense, or the money, or the timing, or all, like, we can have a million excuses. But if you just decide, you're going to figure out how to make it. If you really want it, you'll figure out a way.
Couldn't agree more.
And I think that's true, whether it's like travel or business, like, just make a decision. And then you'll figure the rest out. So what are you loving the most? Or what are you, like, I'm so curious. So we talked about this coffee thing, which is something that, you know, can we sit and drink our coffee? Are there other things from your time so far in France that you're really embracing and that you're wanting to maybe bring back when you come back, assuming you're coming back?
Yeah, no, we're coming back. Don't worry. Well, first of all, let's just talk about the croissant, because, like, they're out of this world good, and we've definitely been embracing that part of French life. And just food in general. X, where we are, happens to be very foodie. Like, the number of restaurants here is just incredible. And so we are loving eating out, going to markets. You know, we just shop for the day. Like, there's never anything in our fridge for longer than a day, because we're buying today's dinner, like, out that day. So that's just a lovely way to live. And I was actually talking with my husband about that the other day, of like, when we get home, like, let's try and keep doing that, because we actually do live in a walkable neighborhood of Ottawa, and we could absolutely do that. We're just, like, programmed not to, and we're programmed to just do this, like, giant shop once a week, or go to Costco and buy obscene amounts of food. And so I think we'll bring that home. The thing that I've been loving, and this is going to be harder to bring home just because it's not part of our system, but our kids, and it changes once the children are, like, grade 6 and above, but ours are under that. And the kids have Wednesdays off. And I love the cadence to our weeks, because Monday, Tuesday, they're kind of like longer days at school. The kids are pretty tired when they get home. It's a lot of learning, especially, like, they're doing the hardest part, right? Like, they're going to school in French. This is a French public system. Like, they're learning so much every day, way harder than what my husband and I are doing. And so it's so nice to have this break on Wednesdays. And it's this sort of family day, but it's also a day where they're in a bunch of sports. We walk them to, like, the pool and the tennis and all these different things. And it's just a family day. And weekends, of course, can be very heavy on family too. But just having that one extra day in the middle of the week, it feels, we just have a totally different rhythm to our weeks. And so, yeah, while we can't probably keep our kids home on Wednesdays from school when we get home, that's been something that we've really been loving. And this is probably also not something we can necessarily bring home, but I've been so impressed by, and that is the food program here in France for the kids at school. Like, they have canteen, essentially, or cafeteria, or whatever you want to call it. And so the food is provided, and this is a served to them hot lunch that has three courses that they sit and they eat with lots of time. They have a 2-hour window for eating.
Wow.
And then they go outside and they move for the second hour. And the food is healthy. It is something like 60% fruits and vegetables, 30% protein. Like, they're, you know, it's just incredibly well thought out. And not that I feel like I can come back and change the system in Ontario or Canada for the food, you know, the whole food system in schools. But I think there's so many lessons to be learned here. And I probably would love to, like, come home and do a bit of advocating around some of this stuff. Because it's just, I think it's so important for the health and well-being of the kids. And then what else? We've just, like, I think the other thing here is we've been so open to meeting people. Just when you move somewhere new, right? You suddenly have no circle. So you are your whole personality and ways in which that you're like out in the world, you're far more receptive to meeting people. And I think that I would like to bring home too. Because just because I've lived somewhere like Ottawa for so many years of my life, you know, it doesn't mean I can't be open to making new friends or expanding my network or putting myself into new situations. And I think we tend to do that when we've been living in the same place for a long time. And it shifts when you move abroad. So I'd love to bring that home. I could probably keep going. There's so many things about the culture here, and I wish I could bring the weather home.
Yeah, it does look lovely when you post like mm-hmm. that looks very nice.
Yeah.
I love that you talked about food. So the episode I'm recording after this is all about food. And I think just the way that Europeans approach food and mealtimes, like it goes back to this idea of like creating the life that you want. Do you want to be like rushing at dinner, throwing food at your kids as you're like jumping out the door to get them to activities? Like, it's just so like, it just has become so normal for us to be rushed and rushing our kids and like stressed out all the time. And again, like, those are decisions. Like, my kid is in hockey. I get it. But also, no one's holding a gun to our head forcing us to have our kids in all these activities. Yeah. And if you're getting to the end of your day and you're like, that was too much, or that is not at all like how I want to spend my time, again, is there an opportunity to think about and let yourself really honestly like acknowledge what you want? And then again, are there decisions that you can make that would allow you to at least have a slice of that or a sliver of that? Because like, this is our life. Like, it's happening now. And that's why I really wanted to talk to you, because I really do admire what you're doing, which is, this is what I want for me and my family. And I'm figuring out how to make it happen, which yeah. I think there's really a powerful lesson in there for people who are listening to this.
Well, thanks for saying all that. That's really kind. And I agree with you wholeheartedly. And even just going back to the meal thing, you know, an hour lunch or whatever that is, you know, even if you can't get that, right? Like, I think even just making the decision that, okay, the 15 minutes that we're going to sit and have lunch together, dinner together, breakfast together is going to be screen free. And I'm actually going to sit down with my kid, not like be continuing to do something in the kitchen or whatever it might be, can totally change the feeling of mealtime. And yeah, I mean, Sarah knows this because I've been in some of Sarah's programs, like health programs and stuff, but that was a big shift for me because I have digestion problems. And so sitting and just actually concentrating on the meal that I was eating made a huge change to how I process my food. And so that was something that I do feel really strongly that my kids need to do too, because it's so easy to get caught up in the rush.
Yeah. And again, it's small things. Like Gemma said, it's literally just taking a lunch break and sitting down. One of the things that I changed when my son started school is I wait till he's gone to drink my coffee. I think you do this too, because I'm like, I don't want to drink my coffee standing and making, like, I'm not enjoying it. It's cold by the end of it. So I'm like, I'm just going to wait till he's gone and I can actually just sit for 15 minutes and drink my coffee. Like, 100%. It doesn't need to be revolutionary. It literally is just being more intentional with how we spend our time. Mm-hmm. And if you're listening and being like, I don't have 15 minutes to drink coffee, that's a red flag right there. Yeah. Right? Not from a judgmental place, but if we don't have 15 minutes to sit down and drink a cup of coffee, there's a fundamental problem in terms of how we're spending our time. And it's no surprise that we're tired and overwhelmed and not feeling good.
Yeah, totally agree.
So with the people that you work with in your programs, what are some of the things? Because I know I've experienced this as a business owner. Again, I have all these ideas of things I want. And then we stop ourselves. Like, we find reasons why we shouldn't or we can't. What are some of the most common things that you're seeing in the people that you work with in terms of like how they basically stop themselves from taking action or from maybe getting the things that they want?
I think it's one thing which we've already kind of talked about, which is this analysis paralysis of like, getting stuck in making the decision and not knowing whether you're making the right decision. And in actual fact, you just need to move, because the sooner you take action, the sooner you have clarity around, does it work or does it not work? Like, do we then course correct and try something else? And even, you know, I can be a mentor and a guide, but I don't have a magic eight ball. So like sometimes we actually do just need to do the thing and then see the result. So that's one thing. I think the other thing is, and this is definitely in my particular industry, but probably applicable across the board, is that it is so noisy and so full on with advice from every direction that as an entrepreneur these days, it is hard to know what you should be focusing on. And especially if you're like a solopreneur trying to just work on something and get something off the ground, there are 117 different people telling you 117 different things to focus on. And they can all work. Like, this is the thing. It's not like one person's method is the winner against everyone else's, or one person's way of doing things is the right way. But I think what, as an entrepreneur, you need to discern is like, what are the ways in which you like will also work for you, because that's what you want. You know, I might run my business a certain way because it aligns with my personality, my strengths, how I like to show up. It's good for my body. You know, it's not putting additional stress on me. Someone else might have a completely different response to those things. And so the more I have been in tune with like not just my vision, but what actually feels good as an entrepreneur, the easier I can make decisions of letting things go. And I think that's really hard as a new business owner, is understanding what to say no to or what not to do, and saying yes to the things that are like the right fit for you. So I don't know that that fully answers the question, but I think it's just an overwhelm of options and then getting stuck in this, in this analysis paralysis, and not just making the decision to move forward. And also probably a lack of confidence, like a lack of confidence in their own decision-making, a lack of confidence in like getting visible and showing up. I teach a lot of personal brand entrepreneurs. And so that means you have to actually put your face out there and like get in front of people. And that's really, that's A, not meant for everybody, and B, scary for pretty much everybody. So there's like getting over that hump too, which is, can be a really big obstacle.
I think that's so relevant for so many parts of our lives too. Like, I'm even thinking about this from the health space. Like, there's a million people giving a million different pieces of health advice, right? Parenting, there's a million parenting experts giving a million different recommendations on how to raise your kids. And at the end of the day, this is something I so like strongly recommend and advocate for, is advice is great, but you need to figure out, like Gemma said, what bits of that actually make sense for you. What parts of that feel good? Because there's like Gemma said, there's 100 different ways to get where you're going. And the sooner you can learn to like tune out all of the noise and to tune in and see like, what makes sense for me? What do I want to do? How do I want to do it? And then who are the right people who I might want to align myself with that are aligned in how I want to do things? And then just learn to like tune everybody out, because otherwise you become completely overwhelmed, and then we do nothing.
Yeah. And then just feel another year goes by and nothing's happened. I think that's another piece, is like building in some time for reflection. Mm-hmm. Can be, whether you do it once a year or, you know, every 6 months or something, I think can be really important to sometimes help steer us back to where we, sometimes it's easy to go off course and we just need to like steer back to, wait a second, is this actually in line with, you know, what I'm wanting to create or go towards? And sometimes we're just, again, we always come back to this like rush of just to the next thing. And we don't build in that time to just have some reflection.
I love that. It's such great advice. And we're recording this in like mid to end of December. And this is such like, it's such a good time of year to do some reflecting, whether it's on your business, your family life, like your goals. And I think a great place to start, the place that I often go back to when I'm trying to get clear on what I want and the life I'm trying to create, is to think about what you want for your retirement.
Yes.
Right. I had this aha several years ago where I was like, when I retire, I want to sit and like drink my coffee and read the newspaper. And I was like, what the hell am I waiting to do? I could do that now.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I don't read the paper every day, but on weekends, I get the weekend edition of the Globe and Mail and I sit down and it takes me all weekend to read it. And sometimes I don't get through it all, but I'm giving myself a piece of what I want. It doesn't have to be revolutionary, but just like, what do you want when you retire and how can you bring parts of that into your life now?
Absolutely. And just to take that really to the next level.
Yes.
It's a slightly morbid place to go. But I also did an exercise once where it's like, what would you want people to say about you at your funeral? And holy crow, does that ever like put things into perspective really fast? Because the stuff that you want people to say about you, probably like half of the things you're worried about today or more, don't matter whatsoever when it comes to, you know, that eventual time. And it certainly put things into perspective for me of, and things that I'd had on the back burner for a long time, you know, like volunteering more or even just doing, you know, I'd love it if at my funeral, people said, God, she was fun when she like got up and did dancing and was like kind of silly. And I'm like, yes, I need to, I can't want for that and then never dance. So like I'm signing myself up for those dance classes because I love them and feel like at one of my most alive moments when I'm like doing hip hop dancing, which sounds absolutely ridiculous, but it's the truth. And so, you know, you just, again, that's like building in that exercise of reflection and looking for the clues of the things that you really want.
Yeah. And that's another place you influenced me. You got me to go to Dance with Emily and now I'm hooked and now I'm telling everyone you need to dance. Just go. It's the best.
It's the best. I'm going to tell you, shout out to Dance with Emily. Okay, other than my family and friends, the thing I miss the very most about Ottawa are her dance classes. There's nothing the same here. This is the one thing, all the dance here is a little more classical. It's like jazz, ballet, modern, lyrical. I can't find me some Emily Finniff hip hop and it's missing my life.
Yeah. I think she's a perfect example of taking your gifts and like fully embracing them. And I think that's what she's going to, I'm going to have to tell her that we talked about her on the podcast. She is, she's a perfect example of what you can create and build and also what it feels like to be in the presence of someone who's living their best life. We all want to be with those people.
Yeah.
So how can we become those people? Because it makes life. And I love that you went to like death. I think we need to think about death more because we all know we're going to die. But again, we think of it as some like future thing. And hopefully we do get to live long lives. But I can't imagine anything more depressing than being at the end of my life and feeling like I didn't spend any of my time doing the things that I loved and that I didn't spend any of the time sharing the gifts that I was given because I was too busy driving my kids around and making snacks.
Yeah. Or being scared.
Yeah. Exactly. Gemma, thank you for this. I knew it was going to be a great conversation and it was fantastic. Thank you for sharing your insights with our listeners.
Well, thank you for having me. It was definitely one of my most lovely podcast conversations. Often it's like very dry business strategy. And so this was far more fun.
I'm glad. So if you're listening to this, I really want to encourage you to take some time to reflect on what you want. And not just the like superficial stuff, but the stuff that you want, like deep down in your heart of hearts, when you think about like your secret desires, like what are those? Because those are here to guide you. They're here to guide you towards your best life, your most authentic life, and a life where you wake up every day feeling good and energized. And I always go back to the words of Mary Oliver. She says, tell me, what is it you plan to do with your one wild and precious life? Because so many of us are tired because we're spending our one precious life, like we've talked about, hustling from task to task on a to-do list that never ends, filling our days, doing everything for everyone else, and then either running out of time or energy for the things that we love. So let's start changing that. Right, whether it's moving your family to France or signing up for that dance class, I want you to start living the life that you want now. Thanks for listening, and we will see you back here in a couple weeks. thanks for spending your precious time with me today. Remember, it takes a village or a podcast community to really make a dent in this fatigue epidemic. If today's episode resonated with you, do me a favor. Share it with a friend or two, and if you have a second, drop us that shiny 5-star review. It means so much to me. Are you eager to solve your own personal energy puzzle? Hop on over to fatiguefixer.ca/quiz and check out my fatigue fingerprint quiz. Let's pinpoint what's standing between you and feeling your best. A big thank you to Jen Hudson and Drew Gardner over at Story Studio Network for bringing these conversations to life. And hey, just so you know, I've got your back. Your fatigue, it's super real and it's definitely not just all in your mind. I see you and I believe you. Every 2 weeks, we'll keep these heart-to-hearts going, learning together and cheering each other on. Because between you and me, accepting perpetual exhaustion as the norm, that's not gonna fly around here. See you back here in 2 weeks. Bye.
That's a wrap on this episode. Thank you so much for tuning in. If you're ready to launch your first course, sign up for our free class in the show notes to learn my method on how to do it successfully and unlock an invite into our signature program, Course Creator School. Or if you've already launched a course and you're ready to scale and go evergreen, it is time to join us inside of the Passive Project, my membership community for experienced course creators. Head to gemmabonhamcarter.com/apply to submit an application. If you enjoyed this episode, leave me a rating or review or tag me over on Instagram at gemma.bonhamcarter. I would love to hear from you. I'll see you next time on the Course Creator Show.